That's music of Cyberchump on WMSC. From which album was that from?
Our first album,
Dreams,
right
Groove.
Dreams Groove.
And Celestial Drone. The drone in there, the low tone drone, is the one I like.
Ah.
It's the one that reminds me of Peter Gabriel, like.
So everything else is superfluous.
Yeah.
You're just focusing on the drone.
Yeah. When that came in, I decided, hey, I like that song. I had to wait a couple measures for it, but hey. You know.
Well, we've always liked droney music.
Yeah, we do a lot of those sort of drone things.
Yeah. Now, Cyberchump, you guys are here back in the studio. Now, we spoke to you probably about a year ago. When your last CD came out, Dreams Groove.
No, that was Abstract Air.
Oh, Abstract Air. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so I didn't actually get to interview you for Dreams Groove, did
I? No. I don't think you knew about us back then. Groove came out in 2000. We put out like an album a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then Inner Grooves came out in 2001. And then last year, isn't that it? And then maybe that was 2002. Mm-hmm. And then last year we put out Abstract Air, which was sort of our dark ambient album.
Okay.
It's our diversion, as we called it.
That's right.
Right, a diversion of Cyberchump.
Right. Yes, that's right. And I'm going. I read it as a division of Cyberchump.
Right. Chump. Cybertrump.
Yeah, my mouth isn't working.
Be careful, or you're fired.
I'm fired. That's right. So let's do a little background about you guys for people who have just tuned in to hear you. Last week I did play a bunch of your songs before the end of the hour, and I got a lot of phone calls. So there's a lot of people out there who don't...
Like, what's that?
What's that? Who is that? They're local? What? Do you consider yourself local?
Yes.
Loco.
Well, actually, this is Alpha and Omega's Kansas City.
Okay.
We have
Chump Labs.
Yeah, Chump Labs, Alpha Omega. So yes, we're local.
Alpha and Beta.
It depends on where we're speaking at the time.
That's right.
Okay.
Right.
Oh, okay. So when you do interviews in Kansas City, you say, "Yeah, I'm local," and
yeah, that's right. I live here.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the basic thing. I'm in Milwaukee, and Jim's in Kansas City, and we pretty much collaborate. All our music now is pretty much through the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just email files back and forth. Because we have the same software.
Okay. How did the two of you meet?
Okay, we just discussed this. It's Mark's turn to talk about it.
We've never met.
You never really met.
No, we've never met. We've decided that if we would meet, then the collaboration would be over.
Okay.
Right. So we're not allowed to meet.
All right. It's amazing how that works.
Yeah. It's really strange. That's it. That's not a good answer.
Because
you get nowhere to go with that.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, we can make something up. You want to just kind of go with it?
Yeah, go with it.
All right. Somewhere back in 1983, I moved down to Kansas City to go to graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, Jim had a band, which I don't know if it's on hiatus now or whatever, because he's a little busy with his diversions with Cyberchump, called Short Term Memory. And at that time, I had read about them in... What was it, like Fact Sheets 5 or one of those On Sound or one of those places you could get, like, reviews,
sure.
You know?
Yeah, just one sheet of paper, maybe 10 reviews on it.
Photocopy magazine. Yeah.
It was during the do-it-yourself period, you know?
Sure.
Right. And so I sent my tape, which is an Exposed Foreheads tape,
mm-hmm.
to him. And but 3 weeks later, in the middle of the night, him and his bandmates come knocking on the door. They sought me out. I'd been in Kansas City for like 3 weeks. All of a sudden, Jim shows up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, he shouldn't have written that letter.
That's right.
That's right.
He writes this letter like, "Please come see me. I have no friends here."
Right. So they show up, and, you know, there we are. And we've been together ever since.
But how did because your two musical styles are... somewhat different, aren't they?
Oh.
Yeah, real different.
You mean he can actually play instruments?
Yeah, right.
Let's see. Well, we like a lot of things in common.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But then we... It's tended to be the way... the people I like to play with are people who don't have the same taste I do, generally. Mm-hmm. Because then something different comes out of it. Yeah, it broadens what you can do, basically.
Mm-hmm. I think my interest really musically has always been more sonic, you know, and more of a sound thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so back in the 70s, I liked to listen to a lot of experimental music and a lot of soundscape things and just, and you know, Brian Eno and that sort of stuff and experimental music in general. And so I had, you know, a lot of things, just people tearing paper for an hour, you know, people breaking glass.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had that interest. And then I think Jim's interest, you had a lot of musical interest, but you also had a lot of those similar experimental interests.
I came, I got really infatuated with the idea of, well, now we call it loops, but basically I had a 16-second electroharmonics delay, and I'd use that for a lot of the musical sources that that we do. On, in fact, on the CD that's playing now, one of the songs is called Calling, and that one, Mark had borrowed a violin, and he shows me, I don't know how to play this thing, and he's whacking away at it, so we recorded these little snippets and put it in the 16-second delay.
This was like 1985.
And we made a song out of it, just using the 16-second delay and little snippets of this violin and us chanting, and, you know, it's just... So I've always liked the studio as kind of the creative aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's the same thing. I mean, the only reason I ever picked up any instruments was really just for the reason of having to make some noise so you could do recording. When I was, you know, a kid, and I wonder, I never asked you this, but how early it is for you. For me, it was about like 8 or 9 years old when I got a little tape deck and started, you know, doing radio shows and that sort of stuff and learning how to record and make sounds and play characters and, you know, have make it sound like the wind and, you know, do a horror thing or something.
Well, age-wise, he must have started earlier than I did because I got interested in recording when I was out of college and I was living in Wichita, Kansas, and believe me, there's nothing to do in Wichita. And it was the first available, you know, non-professional four-track recorder where you could overdub that I bought, a TAC.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I had to have a friend of mine actually build a mixer because they didn't actually sell them that you could afford them.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it was building your own gear, just kind of winging it.
Right. And back in the late 70s, early 80s, for me, it was taking a bunch of tape decks and reel-to-reels and getting a four-channel mixer from Radio Shack and, you know, overdubbing. It didn't have... You know, I didn't have access to any of that stuff. So you end up just trying to make sounds, like take a microphone and duct tape it to a cymbal and then hit it to see what kind of crazy sound it makes and maybe mic an amplifier that it's going into or something. And I think that's really been our connection, is that we're really interested in the studio as an instrument.
Right. And I would say that Mark's a little more of the planned experimental type guy. He's like a Brian, you know, thinks about it, how he wants to approach it. And I like to sit down and just start working. So we end up in the middle someplace. He'll start talking, I'll say, shut up and let's play. You know?
Yeah.
I usually have a concept.
Now, this obviously started more as a hobby than as a career, because you both actually have your own careers.
Right.
Right.
But did you ever think that your hobby would go this far?
I think it was a labor of love, and we just, you know, do it, and then you think, oh, we'll put this out. And now it started to pick some momentum up, and you know, some of the things we'll talk about later with different compilations we're on and projects that we're involved in. I guess not.
Yeah.
You can't think about it. If you spend your time thinking about, how am I going to get my music out there, who's going to listen to it, will a lot of people buy the CD, you really lose track of what the whole point of doing it is anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we learned that. This CD should have been out about 4 months ago. We had it done, but Mark had this, we have to get a label, so we tried.
Well, we had a few interests on our last CD, Abstract Air, actually. There was we had got a lot of great reviews and a number of friends from little ambient labels.
Now, I have not heard your new CD, and it's called Scientists in the Trees.
Right.
Do you want to explain that title for me?
Well, let's see.
Is this a brain hooked up to digital things, or?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a tree.
It's a tree. It could be a brain
also.
It
could
be
a brain, yeah.
Right? It could
or
be a lot of things.
It could be a cloud. What is that? What is it?
Oh,
a cloud, atomic mushroom.
Cloud,
yeah.
Mushroom cloud, yeah.
It's
the two of you right there.
Yeah, very good.
Very good.
First one to pick it out. All right.
What would I say? A patient I know of, a person I know of who has a mental illness, and they speak about the scientists in the trees. And when I heard that, that's, you know, once in a while, you have to just write certain things down and phrases.
Sure.
And scientists in the trees, I thought, oh, wow, that's great.
Yeah.
You know, wrote that down and just kind of keep a notebook of interesting phrases and things like that, so you can use them as song titles or album titles. You know, because some of those are just you know what I mean? When you hear them, you go, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I have to have that.
Mm-hmm.
And it could take years until maybe it fits something that you're doing.
Sure. Well, you still need to put out, you've got Dreams Groove and what was your other one?
Inner Grooves.
You still need to do Groove Therapy.
That's right.
It's got to be the next one.
That's right.
Did you write that down? Yeah.
Groove Therapy?
Yeah.
Did you tell me that last time?
Yeah, that's right. I remember this. It's all coming back to me.
Okay.
Well, why don't we take a listen to the first track?
Okay.
It's called Signals. And one thing I do like is that some of your titles are longer. You got a 6:23 here. That's your longest. I like longer songs.
How long do you like them to be?
Between 7 and 10 is good. I like that.
Well, actually, a lot of these started out to be in 10 and 20-minute songs that we whittled down to actually make sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, when you find yourself talking, you're listening to it back and you're talking through the middle of it, you think, oh, this song's a little too long.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's not, when I'm programming a show, people are at home probably talking over it anyway. But
right. Let's get to the music.
Let's get to the music. The first track is called Signals. There's 10 tracks on the CD. We're going to hear them all tonight. And did you want to say anything about this first track?
I think it speaks for itself.
Okay. All right. Okay. This is my first listen to it. Well, I can see that song getting some use on my show.
Oh, good.
That's music of Cyber Chump on WMSC, a track called Signals from their brand new album, Scientists in the Trees. Is this CD released yet?
Yeah.
It has been.
Yeah. It's on our website.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to www.joyfarm.com, and then there's a link to Cyber Chump.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pay by PayPal or send us a check, write us an email. We'll work it out.
Mm-hmm.
You can also go to Atomic Records and pick it up. They're there right now. And it's on Amazon.com.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Now, we were talking during the break a little bit about how the two of you work together. Because, Mark, generally you don't have, there aren't, like you're not a guitarist or a keyboardist or...
Well, I mean, I would say most of what we do, a lot of the keyboards, most of the basses,
mm-hmm.
most of the basses, the accordions, the theremin,
mm-hmm.
Most of that. So it would probably be the keyboards and the bass and some of the noises and the extra stuff like that. Traditionally have been what I do, and then Jim tends to play guitar. That was guitar, some keyboard.
And loops.
And loops.
I really, again, going back to that's my focus is the loop stuff.
So. Right. Then for this new album, the mm-hmm. stuff we're playing you now, we decided to start looking into loop programs and do loop-based stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jim had been doing loops forever, but he'd been doing them on delays and on machinery and that
right.
sort of stuff.
And we actually, now the recording process is all loop-based.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, interestingly enough, actually we started out going like, well, let's get this program and work on the rhythm part. We were trying mm-hmm. to get some more aggressive rhythms going. And it just had a life of its own. We recorded the whole thing this way. So.
Right. It's always been through our albums that about one of us tends to originate the song.
Mm-hmm.
So and it's pretty even. About half an album will be stuff I originated and sent to Jim, and the other half will be stuff he originated and sent to me. And we've done that more and more. Even when we were recording in our own separate studios and we had the same recording, we've always had the same recording equipment, and now we're just doing loop-based stuff that's more software-based. So we still have the same stuff there too. So then I'll write something and then send it and throw in have a bunch of sounds, have a bunch of loops, create loops,
mm-hmm.
record. Like one of the things we were just talking about is one of our newer songs. We might have, I have an installation that I did last summer, and my wife Teresa and I had this installation and we were playing psychotic people in the installation. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of very strange, kind of breathy, kind of strange noises and shuffling around. Took those and edited those up to make little rhythm tracks and then put them in a song that I created and sent it to Jim. And then Jim takes it and sort of deconstructs it and mm-hmm. changes it around or adds to it and then sends it back to me. And then we just kind of keep going until we finally feel, I guess that's done. I guess mm-hmm. that's good enough. And we leave it alone for a while then.
Yeah, at one time on the Scientists in the Tree CD, I think we thought that I was pretty much the melody guy and Mark was the rhythm guy.
Uh-huh.
And recently, Mark had a big change in his life.
That's true.
He has a son now named Alex.
Right. I have a three-month-old.
That'll do it.
And Mark started sending me music, and it was all melody and no rhythm. So we've just flip-flopped what we're doing. And he goes... Mm-hmm. Wow, that's strange.
Right. In the past, I've always been sort of the rhythm guy. I mean, yeah. He would send me these wonderful melodies, and I would come in there with the drums and the bass and really try to put something groovy in there.
Uh-huh.
'Cause our music has always been very groove-based.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. And then within, like, the first couple weeks of Alex being born, I thought I was going to do a painting. I had bought a big uh-huh. canvas, and I was going to paint a painting for his room. And instead, I sat down with these programs and just started writing music. And I did about 5 songs really fast and
mm-hmm.
That are more chimey. And a lot of stuff in Scientists and Trees has the bells and chimes and all of that mm-hmm. kind of stuff, too. And so, and I sent that all off. And it's, all of a sudden, I was writing much more melody. And Jim comes back with all the rhythms. So we're like, what? We've really interchanged.
Yeah.
And I think it's becoming less and less... It's like it was easier for us in the past to be able to say who did what, and
sure.
It's really becoming interchangeable.
Well, it's amazing that you guys can work that well together by just, you know, by just recognizing, oh, well, this is what's coming to me, so I'm going to do this and
right.
send it back. Oh, now this is what came to me on that, you know, so
it's kind of like, you know, the song, you say, well, what does this song need? You know, it doesn't have a bass line. You know, or it doesn't have a, it needs a better rhythm, or it gets a little lost over here in the structure. I think some of the stuff I send Jim, he kind of looks at it like, what's with the structure on this?
Uh-huh.
There's no structure. And we kind of go back and forth that way. Yeah.
Well, you know, one thing we said on, or the title of Abstract Error was oral sculpting, basically. And came up with that idea because even back then we were tending to record a lot of stuff and then subtract things out. So it would be like taking a block of granite and starting mm-hmm. to sculpt it and shape it. And with the loop-based program, that's exactly what we do. Because Mark will throw a lot of stuff in there, and I'll just basically, you define it by subtracting things out. You might add some more stuff into it, but
mm-hmm.
I find the most exciting part of the process is taking something out and seeing something crystallize into something you really like.
I mean, sure.
It's great.
Do you? Was there a learning curve with this loop-based program, or is it something you guys just fell into?
Learning curve.
Yeah, I would say that this album, Scientists in the Trees, you know, that really was getting back to the basics for us because mm-hmm. we had done what a lot of bands, I guess, do. You know, you work together and you have a structure. Then by Inner Grooves, we really were calling on all these guests. We knew what we were doing, and we were doing more of a jam album. So we called on all these guest musicians like Jason from the Danglers and mm-hmm. Jason Todd, Def Harmonic, and Mike Cashew, a bass player, and mm-hmm. John Kruth, you know. So we had all these people, kind of world musicians, you know, tabla players and stuff
yeah.
showing up. And it really turned into this big fiasco on Inner Grooves with all these different people playing all these different things. And then... For Abstract Error, we just decided it would just be us doing this ambient, dark ambient music. And then from there, we got into the loop-based stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think at that point, it was just us. I mean, this current album has pretty much just stuff we've done together.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few little snippets of loops that we took from other friends of ours where they played on something in the past and we... didn't use it, so
sure.
we, you know, turned it into a loop and used it on this album.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really gotten back down to the basics of us, and this next CD that we're currently working on, the one that we're not talking to you about now,
mm-hmm.
but the one we maybe will talk about with you next year,
yeah.
Is again kind of saying, now that we understand this process, let's kind of throw the doors open and get some guest musicians in again.
Mm-hmm.
It really, don't you think, Jim, it really depends on what the songs feel like.
Yeah, Yes, it does, and it really depends on, you know, when we got the loop based program. I mean, I was so fascinated with it. Like, I banged out, 10 or 12 songs,
right,
like, right away, and I sent them on to him, and he hadn't even started on it.
Mm-hmm.
But then he banged out 10 or 12 back to me, and then we're like, well, we got all this stuff. Let's figure out what we got here. Then you started to write the music. But it was the learning process.
Right. We kind of looked at all these songs. Like, right now, we have about 7 or 10 or something. I think we've narrowed it down again, but we had about 12, you said, that we started the weekend with. And we looked at those and thought, which one of these stick? You know, are there things that are worth spending some time trying to get closer to getting done? And is there a theme? You know, a lot of times you kind of do a bunch of songs and then you have like 20 songs and you say, well, are there ones that sort of would fit together a little better?
Yeah.
And one of the things that we do in a lot of our albums, which I think is really old fashioned, you know, it's old school and people don't do it now. It's like, have you noticed modern albums seem to be one tone through the whole album? Every instrument's the same.
Yeah.
And every mood is the same. And you pretty much follow it. You put on the first song to the third song to the eighth song.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really just the same deal. And we've always tended to go with that old sort of Pink Floyd way or whatever, where you're going on a journey with us.
Uh-huh.
You know, we might pull out different instruments. We don't, maybe everything doesn't sound the same. Some things are really mellow. Other things are really rocking. We want to take you on a journey. And I don't know. You can argue, you know, is that good or bad? But that's just kind of the way we've approached it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and we've had a lot of discussions regarding that. And even when we try not to do that, that's what we end up with.
You're right.
So, there it is.
So, like, on this current album, Scientists in the Trees, we kind of laugh. We feel there's, like, a side one and a side two.
Okay.
You know.
And I think that's how it should be. I agree with that totally.
Right.
Do you ever get surprised by what each of you send? Or like, when someone sends it back?
Constantly.
Is it ever like, hey, that's not the way I planned it?
Well, it's always that way, and it's like, the great thing is, though, it used to be that we were, you know, you get in a pattern of, with Mark, it used to be I'd change something and he wouldn't like it right away, and we learned he had to sit on it for a week or two, and then all of a sudden he loved it.
Then I started getting emails from him, don't comment on this for 1 week.
But now it seems to be a little different because his responses have been,
I've matured.
Recently, he sent me the stuff, and I started working on it, and I'd send it back, and he goes, wow, I never would have thought of that.
Right.
You know,
it's true.
Which is great. You know, you start getting that kind of thing going, and you know you're on the right track with what you're doing.
Yeah.
We've realized that with each other's style that Jim tends to kind of take a... We just talked about it. We don't talk about our process a lot, I guess, until we're in front of people. But that Jim takes a lot of liberty. You know, I'll send him stuff, and he totally restructures it.
Sure.
Whereas I tend to just add to what he does.
Well, I was telling him last night, I said, don't be afraid to take things out, because that's the beauty of this stuff, is subtraction to me.
So I've been doing that. Today I totally nixed the number.
Of course, then I go, I don't like that. What are you doing? We worked through it, though.
Yeah.
That's right.
But it seems you work well together. I mean, if you've got the same brain sensibilities, I think.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's pretty long-standing. I mean, we've known each other since 83, and, you know, probably work... I mean, we didn't really officially really start Cyberchump until about 92.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is our fourth CD, and we're halfway through our fifth CD, and so...
Do you think it actually helps that you don't live in the same city?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we get together twice, maybe three times a year.
Yeah.
The rest of the time is spent on the phone or over the internet, working by ourselves and, doing things... Now, bands are just a lot of work, and not just on playing the music, but, you know, the socialization in a band is just, that's most of the work.
Sure.
It's a lot less intense the way we're doing it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much long-lived, I think.
Yeah. And I also can sort of sense, because you have really good, you know, personalities, that you may have too much fun just hanging out and not getting the work done.
That's what we used to do in the 80s. We used to just hang out a lot.
Well, now we get the work done, and then we party all night, and then slowly by the end of the time I'm here, I'm going like, I haven't got the energy to do this anymore.
I got to go home. Well, let's listen to the second track.
Pressure Tactic.
Now, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, one thing we might say about the CD in general, this was not a concept we came up with. Well, we were talking the other night before I came up here about, I was saying I thought that our CD was a reflection of the modern world as it exists today. You know, it's kind of like, and Mark goes, wow, I just thought of that too.
I was just thinking that this week.
Yeah. And sonically, I think, you know, it's not a pretty album, and what's going on in the world today is not a pretty album.
Right.
You know, basically, anyway, so okay. That might give you a little bit kind of...
Yeah, we think it's a reflection of, you know, what's been going on in the world the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. All right, this is Cyber Chump on WMSC, a track called Pressure Tactic. That's the music of Cyber Chump on WMSC from their brand new album. We're hearing it first on WMSC. It's called Scientists in the Trees, and we just heard Pressure Tactic. And yes, you had a little other country-ish sound there.
We kind of stole, I think, from some of our other albums. We've been doing that, sort of mining samples from our other stuff.
You can do that.
Yeah. You know, it's ours.
Uh-huh.
So... easiest place to do it. It's royalty free then. And I think
John Kruth.
Yeah, mm-hmm. John Kruth on the, what is it, the Argel, an right. African
flute. And then there was a didgeridoo that we've totally scrambled up and can't even tell what it is.
Yeah, Julio Pabon, who's in one drum,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He plays a didge on there.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Very good. Do you guys create the music and then name it, or do you name it and create it?
Well, you know, when you're working... This is interesting. When you're working on a software program, you have to save it as something.
Oh.
Right? So you have to come up with a name. And but we change the names. And sometimes we flip-flop and switch the names, mm-hmm. and then that really messes you up because it was once called this, and now it's called the other one, and some other one used to have that name.
Mm-hmm. So do you sort of sit back at the end when you have the 10 titles and kind of...
I think... we go, you know, the last thing we did on the, to put the CD out was go through and change a few names on there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That was the last thing we did.
That's right. The Pressure Tactic was called Pressure Tactic right from the beginning. There's a file I made in there called Pensive Breath. Mm-hmm. I think that's the one that has Pensive Breath.
And it
has
right at the end.
Me sort of, it's throughout it actually, mm-hmm. here and there, me kind of going like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this theme of, pressure. Going on,
mm-hmm.
and just the pressure tactics being used in the world right now, you mm-hmm. know, by America and by other countries.
Yeah.
So I think it was sort of a lament to that,
mm-hmm.
and sort of that pensiveness and that tension happening.
Mm-hmm.
So that one already had that kind of in a theme when it was being written right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Signals, that was named Signals right from the beginning because it started out, I layered, the thing started out as a bunch of those signals, you know, the beeps mm-hmm. and stuff, and so it was just like a bunch of different signals you're getting, and there some are organic because there's the ocean in there, and there's
mm-hmm.
all kinds of, so it's all kinds of signals, and
mm-hmm.
it just seemed to make sense, and we kept that name.
Yeah.
So there's method behind your madness.
Yeah.
There's madness behind our method.
It's probably more likely.
It could be.
The next one, what, Helium Device. I'm trying to remember if there was a different name for that.
Yes, there was.
Was it? Do you know what it was?
Haunting Bells.
Oh, yeah.
Or Haunted Bells.
Haunting Bells.
Yeah.
Haunting Bells. Yeah,
uh-huh.
That's right. The next one we're going to play, Started Life, is Haunting Bells. And then, and it was an ambient Haunting Bells track that I sent Jim. And when it came back, it sounded like some kind of dark funk.
Yeah, that's this is one of these files he sent me. There was actually no structure other than this... And you'll hear it, the opening rhythm part of it. And that's all he had. And then, you know, what am I going to do with this? And I came up with something.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's sort of a dark... Yeah, he added a deep bass and a... Is it a guitar? I don't know. Is it a guitar or a keyboard sample?
It's a keyboard that sounds like a guitar because the way I processed it, basically.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and one thing, I guess, to tell you, we need to play the next two songs together because they segue together.
So okay. Just, well, actually, didn't two segue into three?
No, there's a definite ending at every one except for two and three.
Right.
Yeah, three and four.
They're very close,
four.
Though.
We put our songs
very close, so the music kind of keeps flowing. It's true.
Right.
Yeah. But that's one of the
things. Because you know that bothers some programmers.
Really?
Just, it doesn't bother me.
You want
me,
like a whole 3 or 4 seconds between things.
I don't personally care, but I had read an article about some programmers that were whining, going on about how, you know, well, when you send a CD and if the tracks run together, you should really indicate that and blah blah blah. Well, you know, but if you're a programmer and you're going to be listening to the music, then you should know that.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. I guess, you know, one thing we never even think of is when we're putting together the CD, we're thinking of the
music.
The music and not as individual songs. We're thinking of the whole package. We're thinking of, like Mark said, this is not a concept so much, but as we want to take you on a journey.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so we want you to listen through the whole thing, and we do segue things together and stuff.
This is insane, but our view of it is sort of like you're sitting, you get the CD,
and
you're sitting back on your couch in the middle of the night, and you put the CD on, you know, and the lights are low, the candles are on, you know, and you're just listening to it and mellowing out. You know, that's the way at least I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
That's what we do when we listen to it.
Oh, give away our secrets.
Yeah. Now, I would be curious to know how many people actually do that, you know.
We'll have to take a poll.
You know, but I'm sure there are.
Mostly guys.
Yeah, mostly guys. So, and they put their headphones on, right?
That's right.
There you go. Yes, headphones. That's right.
Exactly.
Though I was talking about headphones. In the whole sort of new electronica world, I was doing a little research on the internet to decide if I wanted to put a headphone symbol on our new album, you know, on the CD.
Right, right.
And I was reading this discussion by all these like 20-somethings that were saying that the headphone symbol was like so summer of 2003.
Oh my gosh.
So apparently that's over with.
Okay.
Like the hipness of headphones.
Yeah, we took care of that.
Right. So what did we add in there? We didn't put a symbol.
No, we didn't put a symbol. Actually, open up another CD and look in there because.
What does it say on the CD? Oh, no, it's on the CD. No, it says lay between your speaker system and crank it up.
Okay. That is the alternative. Yeah. Absolutely, because I know people who do that still. All right, well, let's take listen to track 3 and 4 and Helium Device. Now, you went from the bell.
Haunted bells.
Haunted bells to Helium Device.
Right.
No.
Well, I don't know. Well, there's a theme in our music that is sort of, I guess what I'd say, like a sci-fi or a science theme.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of, you know, if you look through the titles and a lot of the sounds, especially on Inner Grooves, there's a couple of those. There's a couple songs every once in a while that have that sort of science feel, science beats, you know. It sounds like sci-fi music perhaps a little bit. And so Helium Device, you know, it's this, you know, it's the Helium Device.
You know what that is, right?
Of course.
You know, got to use one of those.
It's that thing in the corner.
Right.
And then, so three, Helium Device is followed by Scientists in the Trees, the cover.
Right, yeah. The title track.
Title track. Okay. Which, that in turn, if these two go together well, then that would be my choice for when I'm playing you, because it's 11 minutes. It's like, yahoo, 11 minutes and 20 seconds.
All right.
Okay. This is Cyber
Make
Chump.
Longer songs.
And actually, let me cue this up here. We got 3 and 4. So this is Cyber Chump on WMSC. That's the music of Cyberchomp on WMSE from their brand new CD that is just available now on their website, Scientists in the Trees. And let's go over your website again for those people who are just tuning in and listening to this music.
Okay, it's www.joyfarm.com/cyberchomp, mm-hmm. Or you can just go to joyfarm.com.
When you were, now the next track, and I don't want to play it just yet, but... Mm-hmm. The next The next track seems political. I mean, but maybe this whole
Oh, you picked up on that.
Yeah, is the whole concept of the album, is it a political journey sort of that you're taking us on?
I think there is a socio-political underpinning to the album, but I don't think, as Jim had said before, that it was a conscious thing that we started trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
We spend a lot of our time talking about those issues,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I think my sense was that as the album started to take shape and we listened to the sort of, I always said there's sort of a dour feeling and the darkness of it and just kind of the serious nature of it in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
I think we just started, the themes of things that have been going on in the last couple of years started affecting us and kind of came in. And then when you have songs, sometimes you say after a song, well, what does this sound like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does this sound like to you? And this song started life called Deep Tunnel. And it's actually in the key of F, so I called it Deep Tunnel in F.
And the way he wrote it, he put them all together, and I said, what does that mean? Because it was Deep Tunnel in F.
Deep Tunnel
no
in
space.
Yeah.
No spaces.
Deep Tunnel in F.
In F. So I sent it to Jim, and we did some work on it, and I think we both thought that it really did sound like a deep tunnel, and that led us to it sounds like a subway,
mm-hmm.
and then that led to Jim suggesting let's call it Sarin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it has a Japanese shakuhachi, I think it's shakuhachi, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a Kyoto flute.
It's some kind of Japanese flute. It's obviously a Japanese flute mm-hmm. sample that Mark put in there, and it's just got this, it's this great sound. As you'll see, it kind of reminds you of Revolution No. 9, the Beatles
mm-hmm.
thing, only it's a lot more structured song.
There's at least two flutes in there. There's a
yeah.
Japanese sort of flute and
there's
a Kyoto flute, and yeah, there's a few.
But it just had the feeling of the subway. It had the feeling of Japan, and
mm-hmm.
obviously anybody who's paid attention to the paper knows that there was a sarin gas attack in the
mm-hmm.
Japanese subway, but I think it was 1989 or 88, 1999 or 98.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing we tend to do is we have themes that have to do with disasters, in case people haven't noticed. And this is one of our disaster
uh-huh.
songs.
Abstract Airhead is a disaster on it.
Yeah.
That's right. There is a sort of a theme, I guess we'd call, it's like, you know, an album doesn't have to be all on one disc. It could be, you know,
sure,
you have an
sure.
album of songs over a period, over four or five discs, right?
Yeah.
The album's just in your head.
Right.
Right? So as you collect these songs, we have this album that I guess we between ourselves call like Great 20th Century Disasters.
Yeah, yeah.
Joy Farmer is starting to sound incongruous.
Right. So there's right, the helium device has been, that's one of the debates we have, is to, is the helium device really a Hindenburg song?
Yeah, right.
And would that go on that album?
Yeah.
Yeah, these are the kind of silly discussions we have.
Okay.
You know, and Abstract Air was all about the Kursk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Submarine. That in what we're listening to now behind us, actually.
Oh, Calling.
Calling, yeah.
Well, right. This is a piece that we did back in 1985.
This mm-hmm. is the loop one I was talking about. That is not a guitar. That's a violin. Mark is playing the violin for the first and last time in his life.
Oh, yeah. Sounds kind of like a kitten.
Yeah. Being a...
Yeah.
Yeah. Being twisted or squeezed. Not that I would, you
yeah,
know,
not that you would
want
do that.
Anyone to do that.
But if it gets a good sound... Do you walk around with recorders at all? Like for, in, you know, like ambient...
No, I'd like to. I should. I've been thinking about that. How, you know, you can buy little MP3 recorders mm-hmm. and things like that, and mini disc recorders.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't really done much of that. It's tended to be, I have in the past, but recently I haven't done as much as I want.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an area we'll probably go to.
Because mm-hmm. for your, you know, great disasters.
20th century disasters.
You'd need some industrial sounds and stuff,
right.
probably.
Right.
You'd be surprised how shuffling paper can sound industrial after we get done with it.
Yeah, I suppose. Speaking of which, do you add can you take a simple sound, like, you know, just the shuffling of a paper, and then do you add effect after effect after effect to make it not even sound like it is?
You can, certainly, and we've done some of that. And with the loop-based programs, what makes it interesting is that it's always going to be in a loop of some size, you know, mm-hmm. whether it be 1 beat, 4 beats, 3 beats, 2 beats. And so it's always going to repeat itself in a certain manner. And what happens is you get these odd rhythms going, but you repeat them in a 4-4 time, and you get this wonderful syncopated beat mm-hmm. going.
Mm-hmm. Well, like in the song we're listening to right now in the background, there's loops happening. But, you know, this mm-hmm. obviously predates any loop software.
Yeah. This is all on a... Every loop on this particular song, every sound on here was done in a 16-second delay loop, so that all the loops are 16 seconds to repeat each other, okay? Mm-hmm. But they're not synced up in any manner, basically. They free float against each other, where in the loop-based programs, obviously, you sync them up, so
right.
everything is synced up. So,
but
it's,
so
right.
the timing is
right.
perfect.
But there's a built-in rhythm that occurs because of that, and right. I think that's kind of part of the interest that we've always had with it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had said earlier that this CD, Scientists in the Trees, is sort of you guys getting back to basics. However, you know, if you were brought up on tape delay loops, which is highly more technical, I think, than a loop program, is it really not true that it is not back to basics?
Mm-hmm.
You've taken a shortcut to the basics.
Well, I think what Mark meant by the basics was we're getting back to just doing it together, you know, just the two of us mm-hmm. focusing on that. But on the other end of it, every CD is going to be different for us because we tend to buy a new... Oh, we got a new recording device. Let's do mm-hmm, that. Mm-hmm. We're fascinated with the studio part of it.
Yeah.
And actually, the studio's how we compose. We don't compose on a piece of paper or with an instrument. We actually use the studio for composition.
Right. We don't sit down with a guitar and write
right.
a song. You
right.
know, we... Not that there's anything wrong with it, but we don't tend to do that.
We used to do that.
Right.
Takes more discipline with
it. Right. That's true. Now it's real technologically based, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's studio. It's a way, you know, you think about a recording and how you're going to develop that recording. So it's real recording studio based in terms of how we approach songs.
Mm-hmm.
And building layer upon layer and what needs to be added. And so especially now with this album and now the stuff we're currently working on for the next project, it really feels like we're doing compositions now.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're placing things in reference to one another and how they all flow into each other. It's different than, I guess, than... I mean, there's a compositional piece to having a band, but in this piece, we're really sort of structuring. You have all these pieces, and you structure them in a
mm-hmm.
composition. And
well, yeah, and I hadn't really thought of it this way, but on Abstract Air, because we were using basically just... Although it was digital technology, it was the type of recorders were just like a tape recorder.
Mm-hmm.
You could move things around a little bit, but it was very difficult, so you tended to just go with what you had.
Sure.
So most of the pieces on Abstract Air are free-floating form. You know, there's no real form to them,
mm-hmm.
which was intentional.
Mm-hmm.
With the loop-based programs, now we can actually, you know, sculpt the music, have key changes where we want them, everything works together, and it really, we have been doing a lot more composition.
Mm-hmm. Well, should we listen to your Saren song?
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, I was kind of surprised to actually see that on there. I thought, oh, the FBI is on you to you guys now.
We don't propose the use of it.
We're on the radar screen.
Exactly. This is Cyber Chump on WMSC. Cyber Chump on WMSC, and I think that's very aptly named, the Saren CD.
Good job, Jim.
Saren song. I like it. Very good. Very good. And it is a, you know, it is a much quieter CD, I think, than your other
grooves.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like... we couldn't have really done this one without doing the Abstract Air, you know, without doing the mm-hmm. ambient CD first.
Yeah.
It really seems like that one informed what we were doing,
mm-hmm.
so that that's now kind of I feel like, you know, it's kind of like walking through some dirt and you pick that up and now it's on your clothes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so the ambient stuff really kind of has hung in there. Because one of the things that I spend a lot of time, I mean, we used to kind of go back and forth on who did what, and this isn't, you know, black and white, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, yes, the past was probably more like Jim did a lot of melody stuff, and I tend to be really interested in the atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
and so on almost all the albums I spend, and that's not to say Jim doesn't do that, but I spend a lot of time, looking at sub-atmosphere and
mm-hmm.
trying to get, like, the deep, you know, tonal stuff happening and just a lot of, I guess atmosphere is the right word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just where is this happening? Is it happening underneath the ground? Is it happening in the air? Is it on the water? I spend a lot of time with that. And
mm-hmm.
my current stuff, I'm spending a lot of time, we're going back and forth. I've been adding a lot of clicks and cuts and sort of weird
uh-huh.
little electrical noises to everything. But yet trying not to put too much of that in, you know,
mm-hmm.
but just sort of little edits and things like that.
Do you ever argue sort of about how much is too much?
All the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's discussion to start. We don't really
yeah.
argue about it.
No,
I mean,
we argue more about, like, how to run the software or where to put a wire. That's the argument. You know, like, well, here, you do.
No,
you be quiet. Now
no,
you put
this
here.
It says it's supposed to go here.
Just let me do it. You know, that sort of stuff. But about the music, I don't think we tend to argue very much about that.
We've come up with a pretty good working relationship. And again, you know, like this weekend is a perfect example. When you work on these things together, it's a completely different dynamic. So it takes us a while to kind of work through it.
Mm-hmm.
What are the rules here? And we did have one where Mark didn't like the bass part on there. And
right.
I was telling him the night before, don't be afraid to subtract. So he told me to subtract it. I'm like,
just subtract it.
Well, you subtracted it. It's working out better. So, I mean,
uh-huh.
you know, you just sometimes you have to get out of your own.
Well, it was nice because we deleted
yeah.
the bass part and then I played a bass part for it.
Okay.
So now, that is self-serving in a way.
Sure. Now, Jim, what precipitates a visit from you?
Well, it usually has something to do with my job. I work for a company in Des Moines, so I get to go to Des Moines every once in a while, which is
okay.
like halfway up here.
Okay.
So when I'm going to be in Des Moines, I figure out a way to drive up here. My wife flies up for the weekend because she and Teresa, Mark's wife, are best friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get to spend time together and stay out of our hair, and we record all weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good time to have Uncle Jimmy come and see the new kid.
Yeah,
too,
yeah.
The new addition, the baby.
No, really, it's about every 6 months we get together.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, try and...
There are some things, though, you know, even though I would say, I don't know, 80% or something, a large majority is done on the internet with
mm-hmm.
each other.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things that really make sense to do them. You know, we like being together, so
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, it's fun to be together and do it. But there's some shorthands, obviously, if you're in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the stuff like recording the live instruments that you can, then add in to the
right.
and do the samples with. Sometimes that's nice to have your partner there to share, to say, you know, I don't know if I want to use this kind of sound or that kind of sound. What do you think it sounds like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that kind of collab, we come from a background of being able to collaborate in the same room. We've just kind of, because of the technology, moved to this more convenient way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nice to mix and match like that
mm-hmm.
and be able to kind of work in both ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you created entirely new songs from the stuff you've deleted from songs?
That's a good question.
Some of the stuff we're working on, and some of this album and then the next one, have a lot of samples. Like, and some of the newer stuff that we're working on right now has almost recognizable samples from Inner Grooves.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, oh, that's Jason Todd's sax, and I remember it being in, you know, in Desert Keys,
mm-hmm.
and now you can hear it in the new song that it's in, and it's just been altered a little bit
mm-hmm.
and changed a bit. But
and you don't
if
think
you know
that's
it,
dangerous?
In what way? How would
it
be dangerous?
Because in the way that somebody might say, well, they're just rehashing their old stuff.
Well, you were telling me what you thought about
well,
this.
Well, it's interesting because he started sticking this stuff in there on these new things, and actually, it's actually improving them.
Okay.
I mean, it's just amazing. But my favorite song that we've done to date is a kind of a rehash of a song that comes off of Inner Grooves, just sonically, not rhythmically, and not the melody of it.
But spirit-wise,
but I mean, you can really tell if you listen to them back to back, you'd know there was elements from each one.
Mm-hmm,
but the new one just amps it up so much, and the song's called Yearning, and it really hits you. It really gives you the sense of yearning. I mean, mm-hmm. It's just amazing. And so I think it really works, and we'll be doing more of it. And if people don't like that, well,
yeah.
What can I say? It's not because we're lazy.
Yeah.
Maybe it is, but actually, it works out pretty well.
We're just stealing from ourselves and
sure.
kind of reinterpreting it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's kind of an interesting thing, is the
right.
idea of reinterpreting your own work, mm-hmm. you know, and kind of having it have a new context.
Well, and the reinterpretation, you know, you've heard bands like this where they just do themselves, you know, they play the same song over
right.
and over again.
Right.
And we're not doing anything like that. We're taking the elements and making something completely new out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different twist on it.
Do you find that, you know, 3-4 years down the road from that initial sound that you had, how much you've changed that Ooh. You can discover this?
When we were putting together the songs for Scientists in the Trees the last time I was up here, we listened to all the songs. Pretty well had this laid out the way we're going to do it and stuff. And we're sitting there. I go, hey, Mark, put in Inner Grooves. And he put it in, and we were just amazed at the difference between the two of them.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
Mm-hmm.
They're very different CDs, though. I mean, Inner Grooves really has sort of a warm jam, sort of psychedelic kind of feel to it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a great party CD, and it just really... And this one, I feel, is more cerebral.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's my thought on it, but... You know, our stuff is very dynamic and very different from each other. And, you know, my take on it, I don't know. That's just me. I don't know what other people think about it. They might have a different take.
Now tell me why you called it Presence from Another Planet.
Well, I was having trouble with...
Should I say our view, what we thought?
Yeah. Right.
See, you agreed with me on this?
Yes.
I thought when I heard... The name was Presidents from Another Planet, and we do have another song called Heaven is Another Planet, and
uh-huh.
they remind me of each other, but in some way. But I thought the reason Jim called it that was my vision was that, oh, there's these presidents that have come from another planet, and
right.
they're visiting Earth. Like there's, like you said, 9 of them,
right.
and they all have different costumes, you know, from their, whatever their countries are, or their, you know, their planets are.
Right.
But apparently that's not the story.
Yeah.
Well... You know, if you listen to the music, there's two parts. There's kind of like a bluesy thing,
mm-hmm.
and there's a, you know, something that could sound Oriental or, you know, the Eastern sounding
mm-hmm.
stuff. And I was thinking about the two, I'm going to be political here, probably not politically correct, but the two biggest idiots on the planet happen to be the American president and the president of Iraq. And we need
yeah.
presidents from another planet. That's kind of what I was getting.
Mm-hmm.
So...
It's a lament. You
yeah.
want
it's
presidents
a lament,
to come
yes.
from... See, now, I thought when you originally told me this, that you thought that these presidents were so out there
yeah.
that they must be from another
well,
planet.
It could be that, too. I mean, there's a lot of things you could say. I mean,
yeah.
it just was a funny thought, you know.
Yeah.
Now, given that 60% of the population likes our current president, you've just
limited yeah.
our market.
Yeah, so we like the idea that there are 9 presidents that are going to come and visit us.
That's right. And they're all good guys.
Yeah, and they're presidential garb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We like the pomp and circumstance.
That's right.
Yeah.
That.
Can you imagine all the national anthems?
Yeah. Right.
But actually,
and some,
song
you know,
is
some
not
of them
political.
Would be like dogs in costumes, right?
Yeah.
Presidents that look like a dog,
sure.
or president that looks like a squid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some songs would be like super sonic.
Right.
You wouldn't even hear it.
Right. Other ones would just be thumping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beating you with a stick. Yeah, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
This is our national anthem, beating you with a stick.
Yeah, I think, you know, that could be a theme for your new, another CD, too. You know, 9 anthems.
Well, that reminds me, yeah. Beating you with a... You mean beating you with a stick could be a theme? No.
No, the nine anthems from the 9 presidents.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Except, didn't Joe Biden do something like that?
Oh, yes. That's right. That's right. 9 anthems. No, we're sticking with the great 20th century
yeah.
human disasters.
We got to get that done first.
Yeah. And then the group therapy one.
That's right.
That's got to come out somewhere.
Group therapy. Well, that one, we'll work on that.
Yeah, before somebody else does.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, I do have to ask you, you talked about how listening through headphones and or listening with your head between the speakers both work.
Right.
Now, when you listen to music, and I have a feeling this is how you are too, a lot of people say, well, ambient music, it's just supposed to be there for the background. It doesn't, you don't really listen to it, it's just there in the background and doesn't mean anything. But if you're like me, I can't listen to a CD without paying attention to it. You know, I don't really just want something in the background because I can't, I can't read the paper. I want to listen to the music. My brain is going, focus on the music. You know, I mean, is that how you listen to music as well? Or do you pretty much have it on in the background all the time? And
yeah, I have it on in the background all the time. In fact, Alex, our son, is listening to The Pearl currently.
Uh-huh.
Bud
yes,
Nino.
That's excellent.
And that's what he sleeps with most of the night. We had a number of other albums, but they were too frightening, and so we had to lighten it up a little
Animals
bit.
Animals like The Pearl also.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
See? So, yeah, we have a lot of ambient stuff in his room, and he's listening. But there's music in our house almost 24/7. There's always something. So I do use music in terms of thinking about it as a sort of a utilitarian thing, and I do like to have it on. And a lot of this sort of, I guess, what Jim might consider boring music that he won't listen to is, I have a lot of this sort of like electronica that's just clicks and cuts and buzzes and noises and things you can just tune out, but they just kind of add to the flow. I like stuff like that, but when I sit down to listen to music, it's not what I'm listening to. But I don't mind having a little bit of atmosphere, you know, something that's, you know, like the wind blowing just in the background. So yeah, I tend to do that, but I don't think
Never. I try, like I do office work all the time, and I'll put some on, but you know, after it's over, I just basically never put anything else on. Where Mark probably runs and makes sure he's got.
Oh no! I go run. Oh yeah, I scamper
CD
over.
Yeah.
No, I put it on repeat. There's a repeat button there, Jim. You know, repeat all.
But that would be boring.
And it just keeps going on all day. Yeah. You know.
Right.
Yeah. I
have like the morning music and the afternoon music.
I hear. Actually, I listen. Other than working on the music and listening to our own stuff, I tend to listen to music driving. So I tend to listen to more revved up stuff. I get a lot of windshield time, and I'm liable to listen to anything.
Yeah.
I just got a good groove to it.
Yeah.
I truly, I guess, being brought up through the whole ambient thing with Eno, that would just be just vaguely in the background that you would pretty much attend to occasionally and ignore the rest of the time, and it would just enhance the environment. I'm a proponent of that.
Okay.
So I like doing that.
So you want people also to listen to your CDs that way?
Well, I don't think our CDs work that way.
No. Well, Abstract Air does.
To some extent.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I think some of the other stuff, well, it depends. I mean, you know, some of our earlier stuff, I feel like it beat you over the head a little bit more. You know, because there is sort of an industrial heavy metal quality.
Right.
And I don't mean, you know what I mean? I don't mean heavy metal in the traditional sense.
Right.
But like off our first CD, like Nerve Nut, the first song off of that, you know, that it pretty much hits you over the head.
Right. Yeah, I had to warm up to that CD.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's more subtle now, the stuff that we're doing. But you said two of your favorite songs are on that CD.
Right.
So, you know, there's a variety to what we
Well,
do.
Well, see, because I recognize my favorite songs immediately when I heard them.
Down with the rest of them. Throw them out.
No, the rest of them grew on me, but the favorite songs really grabbed me.
And they held your attention.
Yes.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's very good.
And we get a couple of those. One of mine was Dreams Groove, which is on Inner Grooves, by the way. That song, for some reason, the groove on that, I couldn't stop listening to that thing. And for a while, it was like a nonstop song that I had on for hours on end. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I do that too, where, you know, like especially like the Celestial Drone. I loved hearing that when I was walking, and I tend to repeat that one a lot.
I think that one has a real space, a place that it is, it's some environment or I don't know, some imaginary place you can go to mm-hmm. with it.
Yeah.
And it seems to be very spacious.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And that, I think that's one of the things we do try to do is really create sort of an environment that you're that mm-hmm. this music is occurring in or takes you to or and some people say that our stuff is sort of like space traveling music or mm-hmm. music for driving through space.